Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Labyrinths in the News for the final Monday of 2009, December 28th. I'm your host, Christiana, coming to you live from the Couve. That's Vancouver, Washington, across the river from Portland, Oregon, as I will be doing every Monday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. My lead-in music is the first cut off of Susan Alexander's CD, Sequentia, called Ecos, which is short for icosahedron, the water symbol in sacred geometry. Sequentia is music using tones recorded from DNA vibrations. Susan recorded these tones in 1988 with the help of Dr. David Diemer, at the time a cell biologist at the Davis campus of the University of California. If any of you would like to chat while we are on the air, please go to Christiana-Anea at blogtalkradio.com. My guest today is an Hispanic-American artist who has incorporated the labyrinth into his art and his calling. His name is Carlos Arturo Smith. Thank you, Carlos, for joining me today as we wind down 2009. Welcome to Labyrinths in the News.
Thanks, Christiana. It's great to be here. It's nice to be on the very last show of 2009.
Yeah. I just introduced you as an Hispanic American artist. Could you tell us a little bit about your background, your family background? Where do they hail from? Where are your ancestors all from originally?
Oh, certainly. I was born and raised in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I lived there till I was 18 years old until I enlisted. Both, believe it or not, my father and mother are both Hispanic, and I grew up speaking Spanish, but when I started school, I had to learn to speak English, so I was not allowed to speak Spanish around the house anymore. But I still have relatives and family back in Santa Fe, and my mother will be 91 in April, and she still lives in her own home.
And where were originally were they from? What part of Central or South America?
Okay, well, Mom was actually born in Mora, New Mexico, and my father was born in Santa Fe, New Mexico. As far as heritage, on my mother's side, we've been able to trace it back, clear back to Spain.
Wow. Okay. That's fascinating. How has this cultural background influenced your art, or has it?
Well, to tell you the truth, it really didn't influence my art until I started doing it in 2000. For all practical purposes, you might say I'm a neophyte as an artist, because I just started in about 2000. And I had done art as a child, but never pursued it, and I was almost in my 50s before I even started doing art again.
Wow, that is fascinating. What did you do before? What have you been doing to earn a living before?
Well, believe it or not, I have a BA in geography from California State University and a Master of Science from the University of Wisconsin in cartography. And I'm a professional cartographer. I was a cartographer for over 30 years. I created and developed and, I should say, worked on developing topographic maps for the U.S. Geological Survey. And I did pretty much everything from planning the aerial photography just short of actually printing the map. So I also had experience doing field work. So that was my background in doing detailed work.
Okay, so what had you suddenly start making art, and what kind of art was that early 2000?
Well, in early 2000, I had a friend that was living in Lubbock, Texas at the time, and she invited me to walk the labyrinth, and I walked it, and I said, yeah, so what? And shortly thereafter, there was another workshop that she brought in a Paul Hosentime from California. And he was doing mandalas at the time. And I started creating mandalas. I was getting frustrated at it. And I continued doing it and started to like it. And I said I needed to do something different. So that's when I started incorporating the labyrinth as part of my artwork.
And what was the medium that you were using at that time?
At that time, I was using black paper and colored pencils.
And so how long did this period take? Because I know what your stuff looks like now, and boy, there's a big gap between what I'm picturing those black paper and colored pencil dark drawings are and what you are now doing. Talk a little bit about the process, and obviously now it's out of this labyrinth that this whole thing has blossomed, which is amazing and wonderful. Because, you know, that was one of my questions, and here it is, the reason why you started in the beginning, which is, it's wonderful to hear that. So give us a little bit of how did it proceed from the black paper and the colored pencils to what it is now today?
Well, believe it or not, that's how it got started, and I've been using all kinds of mediums since then. Everything from, as I mentioned, the colored pencils, acrylics, oils, pastels, charcoal. And most recently, within the last year, believe it or not, I started using copper. And I actually tool the copper now. And it's surprising me because every piece of art that I create, whether it's on paper or on metal, it has its own process of developing. I have an idea of what I want to start with. And I start creating it, and before I know it, the original idea is transformed into something totally different. So that has been the evolution of my art as far as creating it. But what's important to me is that it's a transformation. It leads me through a process that allows me to see parts of myself that I didn't quite know before. I mean, I can be in the gallery for 2 weeks on end and nobody comes in, which is wonderful because it gives me the opportunity to create, to draw, to experiment. And that's how a lot of my work began, is by experimentation, and continues to be a big part of it.
Well, you just mentioned that your gallery. So you live in Longmont, Colorado now, and you have an art gallery and store there. Do you only display your own art pieces and products, or do you include other people's?
I do include other people. I include photographers, I include musicians, and other artists. And I guess my basic criteria is that it has to be something what I would consider healing. And people have asked me the question, well, what do you mean by healing art? And I believe healing art can be any art modality that exists, because I believe all art can transform people into... Well, not transform them, but take them to places where they remember, take them places that they experience, that can create emotions in them. It might be a scene by a river, and all of a sudden it takes them back when they were a kid going fishing with their grandfather or with their father or with their mother, and just takes them to a different place. And I believe that art can be healing in that way. And when it is healing in that way, I think we can discover parts of ourselves that we know that are true and honest and unpretentious.
And so your art is healing. It's been a healing process for yourself.
Exactly.
as well as the finished product in itself is healing for others when they see it or when they work with the now your finished pieces are, you not only have, you have calendars,
correct,
but you also have, because what I look at when I look at the calendar you were a vendor at the 2009 Labyrinth Society gathering, you have art pieces, but are these pieces meant to be put up on the wall and looked at, or are they meant to be traced with the finger? What is your...
I do create different kinds, and some are meant to be put up on a wall. I do have some outside pieces that are textural enough that people can actually run their finger over them and feel the path. It's almost like a finger labyrinth, if you will. So they're either to look at. I know a number of individuals that use the art that they've purchased as part of their altar that they've created in their own bedroom or in their home. They look at it, they pray, they meditate. They just get grounded when they look at the art. And a number of people have commented that that's how they use the art. And a number have also said the reason they buy the calendar is, especially this year, I've created the calendar this year in such a way that I usually add a piece of text, a saying, with each month. And in the past, that text has been within the image itself, and now I have it outside the image because I find out a lot of people want to cut those pieces of art and get them framed and hang them around places, and which is fine with me. It's their calendar and their art. They can do whatever they like with it, and I'm pleased they choose to use it in that manner. So basically what I'm saying is that the calendar is there for people to look at, and it can be used in various ways, either to hang or to use as a finger labyrinth that they can follow with their eyes or with their finger.
And so many of these, what I was struck with, especially your new calendar, I have your 2009 and 2010, and the combination, you use the labyrinth. First of all, you use all different labyrinth designs, and then you have the colors are very much, to me, evocative of the Southwest. So when you say you're not influenced by your background, but surely you've been influenced very much by living in the Santa Fe area, because the colors are very much the Mediterranean deep ochres and rust colors and copper colors of the earth. And it reminded me a lot of some of the art, some of the hammered copper art that you find in the hill country in Mexico, around Pátzcuaro and Morelia and those areas, Taxco. Mm-hmm. And so I just talk a little bit about the way you combine these elements, the colors and the materials that you use, and how do you pick the labyrinth, which kind of labyrinth to go in what picture. And like some you have, the labyrinth is in the center with people all around it. Sometimes it's just the whole labyrinth, and the labyrinth itself is modeled and beautifully, you know, very evocative of the earth and the elements of the earth.
Well, as far as the colors go, I guess you could say I'm naturally influenced by where I grew up and by what I like. I like bright colors. I like different hues that stand out, and tones that are somewhat subtle within each piece, but still it forces the other colors to stand out. And I guess that's all done unknowingly. I do experiment with different colors. There was a time in my life where I would work and be very detailed. If I didn't continue creating perfectly, I put it aside and start all over again, and I realized that the imperfections are what wants to lead me to something totally different. And it's happened. I've started a design, and I had an idea in mind, and something happened that it didn't quite come out that way. But I continue working with it, and something totally different comes out. So the color and the pattern seem to work together. I choose different sizes and different labyrinth patterns because each one seems to be calling for something different. And I can't say that I like one pattern over another because I've had different experiences with different kinds of labyrinth. So I just go into the gallery, which is also my studio, and I just start playing around and creating and playing with if I'm painting it on wood or paper, explore with on metal. I just continue to play with it until something evolves that wants to be shown.
So you're actually using this whole process as a not only the labyrinth, but this artistic process as a metaphor for your life in terms of having patience to allow the unseen to manifest and take it away that you don't think that it's you had planned on going, but it ended up going in that way.
Right. Whatever wants to happen, I let happen. And as a matter of fact, I can tell you I'm working on a piece now that the city has asked me to do because they want to create a banner. And I really got excited about it in early part of December, and I started creating it and working with it. And all of a sudden, nothing came to me. As a matter of fact, it's still sitting. So I still have a month or two to finish it. But I'm waiting for that time when something is calling for me to start developing it, whether it's with color, whether it's the material background, it just depends. But right now, nothing is calling for me to do anything on that piece, and it's just sitting, which is fine.
So I'm looking at one of the calendars here, and it looks like you have hammered, it looks like you use different size awls to hammer out these little, the lines, and
exactly.
To make...
May I ask you which one you're looking at, and I can tell you?
Well, I'm looking at the November 2010, The Inner Path, and it's stunning. It's a copper with mm-hmm. green patina in the center and then a deeper green with the labyrinths.
Right.
But the lines, you've hammered in the paths in a diamond shape, and then the lines themselves are circular. And so
right.
It's all hammered, but it's different types of all, or I guess, points.
Exactly.
And then you did in the center of a, it looks like a Chart labyrinth, or the Santa Rosa labyrinth?
No, it's the Man in the Maze.
Right, the center is the Man in the Maze, but it's in the center of another labyrinth sign.
Right, it's in the center of the Chart's labyrinth.
Chart labyrinth. It is, Chart labyrinth.
Yeah,
it's hard to see. Yeah, I mean that is a stunning picture, and so how big is the actual piece that you've taken this picture from?
Well, believe it or not, the actual piece of the November one is probably no more than 6x8.
Oh.
And I have made them, and that's what I like about being able to do the photography. I do my own photography because I can crop it and show parts of the labyrinth or all of the labyrinth. And I've made them as small as 2x3 inches. And my largest one right now is 24x24 tooled copper. But I do have some larger pieces that I've created with acrylic that run about 36x40.
So with the copper, you take a flat sheet of copper and start working on, you put it on the table, and then you start working on
exactly.
it with it?
Right. I come up with a basic design that I want to work out on the piece of copper. Now, it depends what type of copper it is. Most of the pieces that I'm working now are 36 gauge, which means it's almost like a triple extra heavy-duty foil. So it's pretty easy to tool. I also have some other copper, my outside pieces, that are about 15 gauge, which are much thicker and harder to tool. And I have to use a heavier hammer, heavier points to make the holes. So it just depends what kind of design I have, what I have in mind, and how detailed I want the tooling to be.
And so the other thing that you do, you have this, you've been there, how long have you been with the art gallery in the store in Longmont?
Less than 2 years. I just started, I've never been in business, and I just started less than 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. But you have been, you've taught sacred art making at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum. And what
exactly.
was that like? What were you asked to do, and what was that about?
Well, it was an activity they have at Georgia O'Keeffe each year between Christmas and New Year's, and they have various artists come in, everything from performing artists to visual to musical. And I was asked to come in to help children make what I called intention boxes. And these intention boxes were just regular cardboard boxes, but they could choose various types of labyrinths to cut out and paste on the outside of the box. And on the inside, they had the opportunity to write or cut up pieces of paper that had various types of sayings on them, like they would open up the box and they'd take a piece out. It would say, this is so I have a better relationship with my brother or with my sister, or this is I'm in thankfulness for my mother, my father, for what they do for me. So that's the type of thing I created. I also helped the children create finger labyrinths using paper plates, glue, and colored sand. So, and I've also taught at Longmont Free University on the different techniques I used to create my art. And the comments were quite favorable. So I think my ability not only to use different materials and create different things, but I can see the joy that people have in creating and being themselves and not judging it.
And the, what did the children say about the little boxes that they created?
Oh, they loved them. They were able to take them home, and they have them on my desk. As a matter of fact, my grandson and granddaughter each have one. They live in Seattle, Washington, and they each have their own intention box, or they call it their prayer box.
And it's, this is so wonderful. What other response or what other feedback have you gotten? I mean, you say that you try to help people create art that assists others to discover the truth of who they are so they can gift the world with their talents and knowledge. What kind of feedback have you gotten from people who have purchased your art or your calendars or whatever? Or have you gotten feedback from them in terms of how it's helped them or how what a difference it's made to them?
I have had some feedback from a number of people. A lot of them say that they enjoy looking at it. Some of them say it's helped them to get back into creating their own art, which is really, I believe, very powerful. If someone can influence someone else to start creating their own art, I think that's I was blessed in that particular case. And I've had a number of people come to me and say, you know, I want to be an artist. Well, I want to go to school. I had this one young man come and tell me he wanted to go to school to be an artist, but he hated to take the curriculum because he had to copy other artists. And I looked at his work, and I just loved it. I mean, he was a natural artist. And I told him there were three things he had to remember about his art. And this is my philosophy. Number one, you have to love what you're doing. And you continue doing it. Number two, you don't judge it. You don't say it's bad or good or indifferent. You just create it. And number three, other people's opinions just don't count. So if they like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. And it has nothing to do with the artist.
And now this is a young man? Or how old was he?
Oh, he was in his early 20s. He dropped out of college because he just got tired of doing, you know, copying other artists' techniques. And I'm sure there's a lesson there. But some people are natural artists, and others have to take classes and learn technique, learn how to use color, learn how to incorporate different media. So each has its own place.
Well, do you think that starting art or starting to be an artist at 50 years old or whatever you were, did that help you not worry about that the kind of stuff that you would normally worried about at 20?
Oh,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I mean, I guess I was preoccupied with other activities at that age, but art really didn't start coming into my life until mid-50s.
Yeah. And you've walked labyrinths yourself. What have been some of your experiences, and which ones have you walked? Where?
Let's see. I've walked Grace Cathedral, Chartres. I helped create one up at Salt Spring Island in British Columbia. We've had several walks in Sedona. I've walked it. We've helped create and develop a number of them. We did one last year for a yoga studio in Lamar, Colorado, a Manche studio. We did one for the First United Methodist Church in Boulder, which is a permanent indoor one. My wife, Joanne Mast, who is also a master teacher, has helped me create these, and she's really the instigator that gets me going to some of these places to create them and to build them. And but my experiences have been varied. They've been very profound. Some of them, nothing has happened. But I think the intent is to walk the labyrinth with no expectation.
And have you come during some of these experiences, have they led directly to an artistic vision of any kind?
No, they have not. Go ahead.
You know, one is not necessarily leads to another, but it provides space for it to happen. Because you talk about painting and creating, you know, as being a medium for emotion. So I am assuming that whatever emotions you've been were walking on the labyrinth, that it had created the space for you to be open to paint and do your artwork.
That's correct. It has been. I mean, I've had emotions of just pure joy and emotions of total sadness and almost, I'm trying to find the right word, where I didn't care, if you will. But each experience is different. I think that's what's nice about walking the labyrinth and creating the labyrinth is that it's able to take you to places within yourself that need to be discovered and honored, whether and not judging them, just as having them be an experience of experiencing the labyrinth.
Are you planning on doing any projects pertaining to labyrinths the coming year?
You mean as far as constructing them or creating them?
Anything to do with labyrinths. I mean, in terms of, well, first of all, you work with your wife. Now, collaborate often with her? And do you have anything going on for next year, for this coming year?
Yes, we do. She's got a number of things scheduled for next year. She's working with the State of Colorado Spiritual Direction. She's going to help bring Dr. Lauren Artress to speak to their conference in January. She's worked with a number of organizations here in Colorado and elsewhere, most recently Mount Vernon, Washington, where a hospital has consulted with her on developing more than one labyrinth on their property. So that's going to be a big project. So, you know, there's a lot in the offing and a lot we do locally as well, especially with schools and children.
And tell me, so I don't know you and Joanne's history. Did you meet and then get into labyrinths together? Or, I mean, how did that work that you're both really very, and I know, Joanne, I know what she's doing, so
right,
that you're both very involved with labyrinths like this.
Well, believe it or not, we met on the labyrinth at the Benedictine Monastery in Pecos, New Mexico.
Ah.
And that's where our relationship started around year 2000. And it's just developed since then. She's very knowledgeable about labyrinths, and she's very passionate about them. And being a little biased here, I think she's an excellent teacher because she can get a lot of people excited about the labyrinth.
Well, it's wonderful and wonderful that the two of you are each in your own way expressing the metaphor of the labyrinth and the qualities of the labyrinth in your own way, and yet able also to work together to create labyrinth events. It's wonderful to have that kind of energy to be in partnership with somebody like that, I would imagine.
Yeah, it really is. And, of course, there are those times where she needs her space and I need mine, and that's the way it goes. But, yeah, it's we work well together.
And you were a vendor at the gathering in 2009, the Labyrinth Society gathering in outside of Portland. You have been a vendor before at any previous gatherings?
Yes, two previous gatherings. This was the third gathering I've attended with my art and various Labyrinth products. And it's been wonderful. Each year I meet new people and make new contacts and just start new relationships. So the Labyrinth Society gatherings are a wonderful place to be.
And has it changed at all since you've been doing this over the past 2 years? Is each one a little different in its emphasis, or is it a fairly similar? I mean, I know all the labyrinths are different, but
right. As far as the products and the art, it's evolved. But basically, I find that these gatherings, people like items that are either small or large that have a labyrinth in it, because they're in tune to the labyrinth. I have to tell you, this last gathering, I had a wonderful experience. It was the last day of the gathering, and I said, I'd like to sell a few more art pieces. And I had some still stocked away underneath the table. I said, I'm going to change the energy here. So I took down three or four pieces and replaced them with three or four others. And believe it or not, they all sold. That's just the way of changing the energy sometimes, is to put something different up in the middle of an event.
So you're very attuned to how your art affects energy and how energy is affected by your art. I mean, and how that works. Do you think this has to do with your background as a scientist, or is this just been a process all these years of working with labyrinths?
Well, I think it's both. Number one, because I was a cartographer and did a lot of detailed work, I find the work I do creating art, the pieces that I spend a lot of time with a lot of detail, I really enjoy. Pieces that are more general, I don't seem to enjoy as much. So I'd say it's both. I'd say it's both, the left side and the right side of the brain getting together and being creative.
And do you use the sacred geometry in your artwork too? I mean, do you sometimes call upon your background and your abilities in that area to create balance in the work and visually and?
I think, well, I do use a labyrinth quite a bit, and I do want it to help me get grounded and centered. Especially today, Joanne knows, today I was off the wall, and it just seemed like I was overwhelmed with a lot of things to get accomplished, and I decided that I needed to stop and breathe and use the labyrinth, and it helped get me centered, and I was able to accomplish what I needed to get accomplished. But when I first started, it just seemed like there was too much in life and too overwhelming, and I didn't know where to start. So the labyrinth does play a big part of my own life.
Do you have one at your home where you live?
Not one outside. We have two canvas ones that we have, and we have labyrinths, finger labyrinths upstairs and downstairs.
Mm-hmm. And I know, now I'm looking again at your calendar here, and you have taken Native American archetypal images and fetishes, like the bear fetish,
right,
and incorporated it into your art along with shark labyrinths. It looks almost like a shield, or what a Native American would call, or the top of a drum. I mean, you could easily put this on a drum, and that would be spectacular, by the way. Have you ever thought about doing that?
No, I haven't, but that's a good idea. It's something to play with right now.
Oh, my golly. I mean, this would be the one for October 2010. It would be a spectacular drum head.
Well, a frame drum. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. So you have explored, along with The Man in the Maze, which you have a lot of in here, you have explored other aspects of Native American art in your artwork.
Right, I do. And the bear has always been a favorite symbol of mine. metaphorically, I mean, the sow can really take care of her cub. She's very protective. She's loving. But at the same time, she can be very fierce and threatening. And that's why I think it's such an important symbol for me, is that it's, you know, it holds both. It holds both the love, and it can hold the protection and the fierceness that it needs to take care of itself and its young. So it's a very powerful symbol.
Yeah, it's interesting because in the Cherokee tradition, the bear is a symbol of the west direction because it hibernates. It, and it's a transformative energy. It's a symbol of death and rebirth because it's a hibernating animal. And as along with the snake, of course, and the raven. And so it's interesting that in different Native American cultures, different animals appear in different directions.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So I also have another question about this one, and it's because of the colors. I'm interested in the colors here and how you get this one is May 2010, and it looks like it's a copper, copper that you've hammered, but there's brilliant reds or fuchsias. What gives the color to this piece?
What I do is I tool the piece of copper. You can see that one is you can see the labyrinth, and it has the figure of a woman there at the base.
But yeah, the goddess color, labyrinth.
Yes. And what I did was, after I tool it, I do two things. Number one, I add patina in certain parts of it. But before I do that, I take it and I use a blowtorch to get a lot of the color to come out. That's why you get the reds and the oranges and the slight greens. And what's interesting about using a blowtorch to get color out of copper is that if you leave it there too long or if you take it away too soon, you may not get the effect you want. So it's just a judgment call when you take the heat away and what the result is. And I have no control over the color. I mean, that's the color that wants to show, and that's what came up.
Well, it's spectacular, but it looks very symmetrical. I don't know how you get this symmetry with a blowtorch. I mean, it looks like it's done. It's very specific where this color comes up, and yet what you're saying is it's not. And that's fascinating. Now, did you know, are you familiar with different types of ore that you know that with heating copper this would happen?
Yeah,
I wouldn't have known that.
Well, it was an experiment. And what I do is, since I can pinpoint the heat, I can concentrate the heat in some areas and not have it so concentrated in others. And that's how I can get some of the color. I did experiment with a piece. Believe it or not, I wanted to see what would happen. I put it in the oven at 400 degrees, and it all changed color. It was amazing how it came out. And it all came out the same color. As a matter of fact, the piece is on the February, which is Fun on the Labyrinth.
Oh, okay. And now that looks like you have dancing people. The people are dancing almost. It almost looks like petroglyphs.
Yes, that is, and it was fun creating it. It really was. The idea came from a woman in Santa Fe, New Mexico, who allowed me to use the design, and it was just fabulous. It was a lot of fun to create, and even more fun to see what happened when I put the whole piece of copper in the oven at the same temperature.
Have you gone to any of the Native American petroglyph sites in the Southwest? And
oh, yes. Growing up as a scout in northern New Mexico and a Boy Scout and doing hikes myself, I have been to some of the sites, and they're just phenomenal.
Oh, okay. Well, that explains it. So, I mean, it's very fascinating to figure out how you know, the wealth of knowledge. And it's, and what you're saying is that all of this, that your art is a layered, it's been layered from years and years and years of your experiences, and you've called upon all this different layers of information and experience called it to bear upon the art itself. And it's certainly, you can certainly see that in the finished product here. I mean, it's a wonderful combination of so many different things. And that you would not, that, you know, you would wonder how, but it's very much your art. I mean, it's obvious that no one else could have done this except you, because it's your experience in your life. So this is fascinating.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a work in progress for sure.
But I would hope, if you decide, Carlos, to start making drumheads, or start making drums, or at least start painting drums, let me know, because I will be right there of number one customer for sure.
All
and
right.
I think it's a spectacular idea, given the beautiful work that you do. And I would love to have a drum with some labyrinth on it, frame drum with some labyrinth on it. So maybe I can commission you, do a commission for me.
Sure, yeah. If you find the drum, I could certainly be creative, and we'll see what we can come up with together.
Okay, that's great. Well, we don't have any callers. I've been waiting to see if anybody would call, and nobody's really decided to give us a call today. So do you have anything? I know. So, you know, everybody gets really busy, and even, you know, you have to hound people, I think, to make them actually pay attention and actually call. Even with the best intentions, people get busy. So that's the way it goes.
Of course.
But
this is what wanted to happen.
I know. Do you have anything else that you would like to share about any future projects or we're going to have the next TLF gathering is going to be in New Harmony, Indiana. Are you planning on being a vendor then for that?
Oh yes, I'll be participating at that. That's for sure. And I am planning. And as a matter of fact, I have to get into the gallery this week and start creating some new and different pieces. And I don't know what I'm going to create yet until I get there and start playing with something. So I don't really have any plans as far as specific art pieces to create. I do have some wonderful ideas that have been presented to me. It's just a matter of taking the time to try to work those in.
It would seem to me that your pieces would be spectacular as for fountains. For you know, you could do the copper pieces as a backdrop for a fountain. Within a labyrinth, you know, in the backdrop with a fountain, with something to do with landscaping. It looks to me, that's the image I get, or the feeling I get with your stuff, that you could actually really create large pieces that could be attached to granite or attached to, you know, smooth stone.
Right.
And be a very effective
I think you're right. And as a matter of fact, believe it or not, my son has talked to me about creating one for him for their kitchen as a, I guess, a splash card by the sink. So I don't know. We'll just see. I mean, the ideas are coming up.
Carlos, we've got only 1 minute, and somebody's here wanting to talk. So let me just get this person on the line real fast.
Okay.
Hi, you're on the air. This is Christiana and Carlos.
Hi, this is Linda.
Hi, Linda. We only have 60 seconds, so
okay.
What's up?
Well, I wanted to know if Carlos would speak a little bit about how he came to decide, if he hadn't talked about it before, what made him decide to go out on his own, and to talk a little bit about that process for him to do that.
Okay. It took a lot of people to encourage me to get my art out there. I was creating it but not getting it out there. And with their encouragement and pushing and encouragement, I started to put it out there. And that's how I got my art, my labyrinth art, healing art, into the public's eye.
How long a time did that take? I mean, months, years? What was that process like?
Oh, I'm still going through it, believe it or not. I'm still trying to convince myself I'm an artist.
Oh, my golly.
And the encouragement, what was it that convinced you to be able to do that?
Oh, boy, that's a tough question.
Well, what would you expect?
Yeah, I guess other people and a lot of being able to express myself, but with other people's encouragement without, I guess getting the courage to really put it out there.
But you had the help of your wife and your family.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And just the probably the art itself probably was very healing. I mean, you're talking about this is healing art, so this
Correct.
Is part of that healing process, the process of coming from a place of fear and,
mm-hmm.
and insecurity to a place of, you know what, I can really probably do this.
Yes.
As you're working on the pieces.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it was a process trying to convince myself that I could do it. But it worked.
That's
so
great.
I don't know your name. What is your name again?
My name is Linda.
Linda, hi. Any other questions? Because we're actually not on. We're not streaming, but we're still on. So this is being recorded.
Okay.
So any other?
I'm just trying to think if there's anything else. I think that a lot of other people would really like to know that process of trusting oneself and doing the art. And as you said, the process itself is healing and leads you to trust your intuition.
Mm-hmm. It is really tough. I mean, just trying to believing in myself. It took a long time. The process was trial and error, letting some people see it and others not, and then opening that audience a little bit more to more people. And as time went on, I finally had the opportunity to open my own gallery and open it up to other people in other venues, in other organizations, in other events, both Labyrinth and non-Labyrinth. It's just getting the exposure, being willing to show it without letting whatever criticism comes affect you, and just doing it.
That took a lot of courage.
It did.
What inspired you to trust and to have that courage?
You know, I'd have to think about that, Linda. I really don't know. I'm sure the answer is there. I just have to put some mind to it and think about it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's also it's not something that's quantifiable. This is, you know, I know for me personally, it is a matter of trust, and trust is gained by the snail's pace. I mean, and you take two steps forward and one step back, and
mm-hmm.
and some days you feel great about yourself and you're going full out, and other days you're going, what am I doing? And you want to crawl into a closet and shut the light off.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the labyrinth shows us in its twists and turns and its wanderings, just this whole thing of that it's not a straight path. It's a twisty, turny path. Sometimes you're in the center and you feel really good and you feel that you have the world by, you know, the tiger by its tail. And sometimes you're all the way on the outside and you're going, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? Who cares?
Yep. And I think another part for me is that, I mean, maybe this is the answer to Linda's question, is that the trust came when I believe I realized I'm not in charge. spirit's guiding, and I'm not the one that dictates how things evolve or come about. I just trust that I take each step, and what wants to happen will happen.
Yeah, I think I really hear that surrendering was a really important part of that process.
Oh, it's a big part. And I think that even goes through for life in general, even not having been involved with the labyrinth or doing any art. It's just that surrendering and letting whatever wants to happen happen and not judging it and taking the next step forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or taking whatever spirit gives you. I mean, you don't know
exactly
what it's going to, you don't even know if it's going to be a step forward, but sometimes you just hand it something on a silver platter and it's, you know, you take it or you don't.
Exactly.
Accept the challenge and the risk or you don't.
Yep. Yep, that's exactly it. Then, you know, many times in my life things have been presented to me and I didn't take advantage of them, and I wonder what the result would have been other than that. But based on that choice of making no choice, that's a choice in itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is. Thank you for your responses, and I appreciate your honesty and really looking at what were those things that were there for you.
Thanks, Linda. I appreciate the comments and the questions.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And thank you, Linda, for calling in. It's always just makes things so much broader and deeper when a caller calls in and takes the time to do that. We really appreciate it.
Okay, you're welcome. Do you have time for one more question? Because I'm with someone, and he would like to ask a question as well.
I guess as long as we're talking, it'll go
sure.
On. It's just not streaming. So when you listen to this archive, you'll hear the whole thing. So it's just no one else is hearing it, just us. So it's fine. I mean, we can do another question.
Okay.
Okay, my name is Richard, and I'm a friend. I have a kind of question. I work with music, and it seems that the labyrinth, working with the labyrinth, gave you a structure to work with to deal with the uncertainty and to have trust. And I find in my work that I'm kind of overwhelmed. There's not any structure, so I'm kind of plateaued and not moving forward in my artwork, and kind of losing trust in myself. What would you say to that? Have you ever had that kind of spot in your life?
Richard, I can't say that I have, but I what comes to me listening to the question is that you may be at a plateau. And it could be that Spirit's telling you this is where Spirit wants you to be and to work with what you have and continue going, repeat what you've done in different modes or modalities, and especially with your music. And I think it's telling you continue what you're doing because you're doing fine, and when it's time to move to the next step, I think something's going to happen and it'll take you to that next level. That's the only thing that comes to mind right now. I mean, that was the first thing that hit me, was that maybe that's where you're supposed to be right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I mean, and Carlos, you mentioned working on a piece that you, a banner or something for the city,
right.
And you've put it aside because nothing's really come forward. You sort of reached a plateau with it. You're not really doing anything with it, and nothing's coming forward to urge you to go in a certain direction, so you've actually just put it aside. And that takes a little bit of trust and courage in and of itself to allow yourself to put what you're doing aside and let it sit and not try to push yourself that you feel that you have to go forward and you have to move through this. And and there must be another step. There must be another place that I'm supposed to be, rather than just being where you are.
Exactly.
And I would encourage you to go find some labyrinths and walk some labyrinths, especially as a musician. You know, I play the hammered dulcimer, and also find some labyrinths to play next to. People love walking to music. I don't know what kind of instrument you play. But
guitar and keyboard.
Use labyrinths to sort of work through this and ask these kinds of internal questions.
Yeah,
you know, where am I supposed to be going? And am I supposed to be just standing still and stopping and reassessing or what direction? What do I feel called to or pulled to, but I don't think I can for whatever reason? You know, stuff comes up for me.
Yep. If I could just interject, there's one thing that happened. I needed a piece of art, and it sat for 3 years. And finally, I took it out. I knew exactly what to do with it. So it just varies.
Yeah, so you don't have to move forward. Yeah, well, we'll have to go out and find some labyrinths here.
Where are you?
In Alabama.
Alabama.
In Huntsville, Alabama.
Look on the Worldwide Labyrinth Locator on the Labyrinth Society website, labyrinthsociety.org. There's a Worldwide Labyrinth Locator, and you will find labyrinths in Alabama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Say what that website again.
Say the website again.
Sure. Carlos? The Labyrinth Society.
Correct.
.org.
Yeah.
And then when you go on the page, you'll see Worldwide Labyrinth Locator on the top, and just click on that, and it'll bring you up. You can go into the state that you're in, and then it'll list all of the labyrinths that are open to the public, that are by appointment, whatever, all the different ones that are listed there.
Yeah, when we were in Santa Fe, there were labyrinths around every corner, but in Huntsville, we're surrounded by Baptist churches. So I don't know if they have any labyrinths.
They do.
Some of them do. So we'll track them down.
Great.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Richard.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Carlos.
All right, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Okay, Carlos, I think we're out of time.
15 minutes later, but that's okay.
Well, thanks
just
so
wanted
much
to happen.
Thanks so much for joining me today. It's my intention to enlighten labyrinth neophytes and support labyrinth veterans with guests like you who provide a depth of information and personal experience not available through other sources. So thank you again so much for joining me today. Many blessings on your path and a happy, happy Gregorian New Year 2010.
Christiana, thank you very much for the opportunity, and it was a pleasure working with you and talking with you and your guests.
Terrific. And you take care in Lakesh. You've been listening to Labyrinths in the News in the live category on blogtalkradio.com with your host, Christiana. Please join me next year as I travel further afield seeking labyrinth luminaries who wish to share their passion and purpose with me. Check my BTR site page for the updated schedule. Have a blessed week and a magical new year in Lakesh.